Caleb Williams said in the postgame Sunday that he and Rome Odunze have been staying after practice for about 10 extra throws to work on their timing together. Did the extra work contribute to the breakout game this past Sunday? The two connected six times, 110 yards, and a fourth quarter score. Are they just getting started?
Boy, you sure hope so. I mean, I like the idea that they're staying after practice and working on stuff, and I like the idea that Williams talked about finding a rhythm in the passing game and being able to time up how, you know, think about it. Rome Odunze is a big guy. He's a fast guy. He can run down the field. He can catch contested passes. You need to get that timing worked out. It's a pity that couldn't happen during the offseason, but there you have it. So the fact that the two of them have this time together after practice and they're just doing it as a couple of rookies drafted in the top 10 together, yeah, I hope they're just getting started. I also wonder if DJ Moore is, he said after the game that he felt like he was something of a distraction. In other words, they were using him as a way of getting the ball more to Rome. And I think it worked. It definitely 110 yards, six catches, and the touchdown in the fourth quarter. They had a 47-yard connection. So they're working well together, but it's got to be more consistent. You got to have that kind of production with less attempts, right? Isn't it as simple as that?
Well, if you're looking for something positive to take out of Sunday, that was it. The two guys drafted in the top 10 connected as many times as they did, and it can only go up from here, hopefully.
I guess. I think that's doesn't really... If you're DJ Moore and you see that, I do wonder about what you think every time you read and see and hear about how great the chemistry is between the two rookies. And I do wonder if over time that takes a toll mentally, because, you know, he isn't a diva. He's not diva Moore, but he is becoming more and more decoy Moore.
Wow.
He's a guy that, you know, he acknowledged it. So he's not the focal point of this passing game, and you can see it easily evolving into Rome Odunze being the guy who is the number one wide receiver just because of the chemistry that continues to build and grow with Caleb Williams. And that is a great thing, and there's no downside to it. I do think that it's interesting that, you know, the focus, and I guess this is just our first question and it won't be the focus right of the week, but the focus of the quarterback and the wide receiver spending more time after practice to get better on their chemistry after they did connect for six catches and six receptions for 110 yards. I think that it also that leans into this whole identity issue that we're going to talk about later. The identity of the Bears is that they are a team that wants to spend extra time throwing it around because they're going to be a team that throws it around. I would rather hear anecdotal evidence of Nate Davis staying with Kieran Amagaji afterward on a blocking sled. That would give the Bears some sort of identity that, you know what, that's the chemistry you want to develop. That's what's missing from this offense. Rome Odunze absolutely had a fabulous day. Would have liked to see him come down with maybe one more catch, that maybe that interception.
Yeah.
If that's Davante Adams, does he come down with that catch? Those are the standards you want to hold him to. That's the kind of thing you want to see from him. So this is really good stuff, the chemistry they're developing. I do wonder how long that goes before Keenan Allen and DJ Moore say, hey, we're ready to run too.
I think Keenan Allen is a different situation because his contract is up at the end of the year. DJ just got $110 million on a four-year extension.
Yeah.
So that should buy you a little leeway, right? We're gonna be a decoy for a few games. I don't think you can complain, but I understand.
He's not going to complain.
No.
And if he's going to complain,
guy,
he's going to do it on Monday at 8 o'clock.
Oh, that he will come on,
yes,
and complain to us.
Yeah.
Lay out the
it's a good question.
What do you want to hear from Caleb Williams later today when he meets the media in light of Jaden Daniels' breakout game on Monday Night Football, Justin Fields' 3-0 start as a Steeler, and his own, Caleb's, turnovers in the past two games? Would you rather see or hear Williams acknowledge the noise, or do you want him to tune it out?
What a tough week for Bears fans. You've got Justin Fields 3-0. You've got the reality that Jaden Daniels is the hottest quarterback in the NFL right now. And, oh, by the way, the Seattle Seahawks don't miss Shane Waldron. They're 3-0 without him. And maybe you draw your own conclusions, but there was a lot of noise. There's a lot of stuff that could come up today when Caleb Williams gets behind the microphone, but I do want to hear him acknowledge none of it. I do think that he should probably just say he can only worry about things that he can control, and he's going to control those controllables, and that is what you want to hear from your quarterback anytime. I'd like to hear him explain what's on the wristband. Now that he's wearing the wristband and everybody's making such a big deal about the wristband, is there more than just help on the wristband? Because
911.
Exactly. Because every pass play is an emergency. So I think he's going to have to handle himself as composed as we're used to seeing him handle himself, hearing him handle himself. But control of the controllables. I don't want to hear him like, you know, we all have the examples and we get triggered by, you know, Mitch saying turn the TVs off and however Justin Fields dealt with it. This is a new quarterback. It is a new era, as we keep saying. And he'll handle things in his own way. But I hope he doesn't get drawn in or sucked into the noise and have to address it, because that's our job, to create it, to acknowledge it, and to, you know, talk about it. But I don't think that Caleb Williams needs any part of it.
Will he even be asked about, Grammy, will a reporter use those names specifically to him? I think that's an interesting. Will it even get brought up? I mean, somebody like Mark Potash, maybe. But otherwise, I don't see anybody up there bringing those guys up by name. Hey, did you watch Monday Night Football?
Well, let's ask Weider at 7:25. Yeah. I think they should. That's a fair question.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Yeah. I think it's fair. I think you should. I just think it's different. It's to me, it's even more different now than when you guys were there on a daily basis. And I could be wrong. It won't be the first time, not the last time. Here's what I want to hear him say.
Are you calling them soft? Is that what you're saying?
No, I just...
Or are you insulting us?
No,
I just
neither.
Can't follow.
Well, I'm usually always insulting you, right? But I just think it's different when you work with these people. As much as they're together, you have to maintain a professional relationship.
Right.
And I think sometimes you're worried, especially with Caleb Williams. They're just starting to build a relationship with him.
But he there's can nothing handle that. It's
yeah.
I don't think he can.
There's
I'm
nothing
just
unprofessional
curious.
About asking him about the number two overall pick in the draft playing better than he is right now.
I agree. Here, I'll bet. I would wager, since we like to talk wagering a little bit, that only one of the two names will be mentioned. I will be shocked if both Jaden Daniels and Justin Fields' names are specifically brought up to him. But that's just part of the question. I want to hear him say, I've got to protect the ball. I cannot turn the ball. I have to cherish this ball. I have to love this ball. I cannot get rid of the ball. Yeah. Also, I want him to admit, Molly, you and I talked about this, and to me it was the biggest play of the game. He had an opening. He could have ran it 25 yards. Instead, he sailed it through the end zone. Santos had a lineup for that 56-yard field goal. He runs 10 yards and does the water slide. Santos nails that field goal. The game is just different. Why is he afraid to run the ball?
Might have hurt himself on the slide.
Why is he afraid to run
Never
the ball?
Know.
I think he wants to. He's hunting touchdowns, to answer the question. What do I want him to say? I want him to say that Jaden Daniels is running a college offense and everyone knows it. I mean, I'd love to hear him just kind of go off on it. I don't think I'm gonna. Just for a story, wouldn't that be something special? By all accounts, the Redskins, the Washington football team, or the Commanders, I guess they're called, they are claiming that they would have taken Jaden Daniels had they had the number one overall pick.
That's easy to claim now.
That's the easiest thing to say now. And I would love to get his reaction to that.
Yeah.
You want to know what I want to hear?
That would be awesome. Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but that, I mean, you would gobble
the
that
hometown
up.
Kid,
you would gobble that up.
There's no way they would have passed on Caleb Williams.
They claim that, and you're right.
Garbage.
They're claiming it now, but there have been insults to Jaden Daniels that he is running a college offense.
Yeah.
And, hey, Justin, would you like to run the college offense? I'd be very curious to know what he thinks of Cliff Kingsbury doing what he's doing with that kid, and how would that have worked if he were here, that kind of thing. I don't think we'll get any of that. I think if you watched him in the post game, he is a very composed individual. He is saying the right thing. He's going out of his way to say the right thing, even when he's complimenting things, and he's careful not to inadvertently kind of compliment one guy at the risk of another. So he's very careful in what he's saying. He's had a lot of good media training, and I expect to hear that today.
Oh boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, not today, but tomorrow. Have you spent much time considering what Brad Biggs told us yesterday, namely that NFL teams are 23-144 since 2015 when attempting 50 or more passes in a game? Do you think the Bears knew that statistic?
It didn't appear so, right? I mean, the Bears abandoned the run pretty quickly in that game. They had some success with Roschon Johnson, and they abandoned him pretty quickly. I think a lot of the things that I heard yesterday stayed with me. That statistic was like a rock in my shoe. I couldn't get away from it. But something that Dave Wannstedt said also really triggered me, and he said that that Khalil Herbert, they hadn't used him in the game, and then they brought him in for short yardage. They brought him in and ran him three times, once on a direct snap at the goal line. And he talked about how running backs need to get lathered up and need to have some carries. And you had just gotten a first down with Roschon Johnson. Why wasn't he? He seems more the inside the tackles runner than does Khalil Herbert, and certainly DeAndre Swift. Why wasn't he the guy that was running in short yardage situation? That bothered the heck out of me, and that stayed with me yesterday. But yeah, I need to know more about that statistic. When you get to 50, is that the drop dead point? Is everybody winning until you throw the 50th pass? Could you stop? Hey, we're at 49. No more passes. Could you conceivably, would that work?
I think even 40 sounds like a lot. But
40 sounds like a lot.
I'd like
I
to
agree.
Know that
you should be throwing no more than 30-something attempts. Run the damn ball.
I think it's a great stat. It's a great tidbit. And that's one of the things that Brad brings to us each week. A great number. But here. Did they know that? No, they didn't know to go for two when down five. So they didn't. They definitely didn't know that. I mean, if you
want to get to that, though,
can we?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I mean, when you're, I mean, that should have been. I mean, they got caught up like a high school team that because Roma Dunze and Caleb Williams connected for a first touchdown pass.
That's on them. That's on those two.
Caleb Williams should have been going like this. He should have been
exactly.
going to the sideline.
They
he
were arguing
like
about
this.
Who gets to keep the ball.
I know, we're joking. It was a big
but,
yeah.
but you know what?
Thing.
Flus deserves blame for that, and he's gotten a lot of it. But so does Caleb Williams. He's the quarterback.
He's
you
the leader.
Patrick Mahomes would have done that? You think Josh Allen would have done that? How about Joe Burrow? No. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I love you. Still love Joe Burrow.
I still love Joe Burrow.
He's the last man.
No, I still love Joe Burrow. All right, Biggsy doubled down on that. After the show, he texted me this: 23-141 in regulation game. That's 23-141 since 2015. That teams that have that's the record for teams that have thrown 50 or more passes. 41 of those 141 losses have been by two touchdowns or more, 14 or more points. So not only do you get beat that often, but you get blown out. Often, don't throw 50 passes. If the Bears throw 50 passes again this year, something has gone terribly wrong. I can't imagine sitting here on a Monday morning talking about, oh boy, the Bears threw 54 passes and won the game 27 right. to 25 or whatever.
Well, the very fact that you're throwing, you know, you're throwing to score, right? So that doesn't surprise me. The 41 teams losing by double digits. Why else would you keep throwing?
Well, I think the Bears have to be more aware of it than they appeared to be against the Colts, and they have to be more aware of what they're doing in the midst of doing it. And I think that, we kid about the two-point conversion issue, but I think it speaks to this whole idea. The Bears lack such awareness on game day, and this is not the team that has represented itself through three games as, you know, nobody's going to accuse the Bears of being the smartest team in the league. Not when they're looking at 52 pass attempts, not when they're looking at going for, needed to burn a timeout instead of going for two because they were busy celebrating or the coach was thinking about what he's going to call in the next defensive series because he's doing too much on the sideline. This is something that they have to have ingrained in their psyche, their football psyche, and be smarter, be better, and you can avoid these kind of situations.
So what will it be next week? You know, last week it was they blew two challenges. This week it's the dumb arse. You know, time out for no reason. What will it be next?
Do you know how many different answers there could be to that question?
Something new and exciting.
Two different questions there between the next 6 weeks and then in the season.
That's the voice of Dan Weider. He's here at 7:25. Which non-Bears QB do you think the Bears fans will pay closer attention to this year? Number two overall selection, Jaden Daniels of the Commanders, or the Bears cast-off, Justin Fields with the Steelers. He's 3-0. Do you think either quarterback's success will make you feel differently about Caleb Williams' season?
I really think that I'll answer this different than probably most Bears fans will answer this. I think that if Justin Fields leads the Steelers to a playoff berth and Caleb Williams is the quarterback of a 7-10 Bears team, there will be a season-long conversation about if the Bears did the right thing. And I think that's probably going to be more valid and sustainable or lasting whether you like it or not. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably the quarterback that most people will fixate on or focus on, because let's face it, the last time we saw Justin Fields in Chicago, people were chanting his name. And so he was a hard guy for a lot of people to let go of, even now, especially now. I think the Jaden Daniels comparison is one of the things that's just going to follow him throughout the course of their careers, respectively. The Justin Fields stuff will wear off eventually, but not yet, not this soon. Right now, I think Justin Fields is at the forefront of most Bears fans' minds. Jaden Daniels scares the heck out of Bears fans because he's maybe running a high school or college offense, but he's running it well, and he's running it expertly. So I think that will be something that always going to be a point of comparison. But Justin Fields is a guy I think that could make everything that Caleb Williams does kind of with an asterisk put into that kind of context.
Well, Molly, as you reminded us all yesterday, the Bears never even talked to Jaden Daniels. He wasn't really even on their radar. So I get a Bears fan thinking about it, but you shouldn't think of something that was never going to be. Justin Fields was here. So I think in a landslide, it's Justin Fields. Now, of course, you're going to pay attention, especially when these two teams play each other at the end of October. I think the 27th of October, the Bears are at the Commanders. You know, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb if Jaden Daniels wins that game and looks better, doesn't turn the ball over, has a higher completion percentage, all those types of things. But Justin Fields is potentially the one that got away.
Well, that's the answer. I mean, he was here, right? And he wasn't the one who got away. He was the one who was given away. They didn't get anything for him. I mean, maybe they'll end up with a fourth-round pick rather than a sixth-round pick. And even Mike Tomlin didn't seem to commit to that yesterday. Did you hear Tomlin? He's still talking about Russell Wilson. He had the most bizarre answer when asked if he was ready to name Fields the starting quarterback permanently. He was like, oh, there's myriad decisions. And,
perfect.
You know, you can't.
Perfect.
He
handled it perfectly.
I thought he's like, I don't make a decision until I have to. It made it sound, I understand he wants to keep both guys engaged, but it made it sound like it's all tentative. And the minute this guy turns the ball over, he had a pick last week.
It is.
One more and you're done, son.
It's tentative.
I know. He's treating him he's not trying to coddle Justin Fields in any way, right? He is definitely making the kid earn it week in, week out. Maybe that's why they're winning.
Yep.
They got the Colts next. I got a feeling they're going to run the ball against the Colts. I think maybe the quarterback will run the ball. There'll be the old Wilson enema given to the Colts this weekend.
Now, they can run an option against the Colts and get away with it.
Oh, they could win with that play. Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to be fascinating to follow what happens with Justin Fields and his career, period, end of story. I've said this before. You know, I get it. If you want somebody that can throw the football and you want somebody that is going to win a Super Bowl, you're probably looking for an upgrade. But I have never seen anybody make those kinds of runs in an NFL game. You are not supposed to be able to run 80 yards down the field, through people, around people, all the rest of it. It was amazing to behold when he was here.
I'm not going to take any questions.
Well, we know whose voice that was. How bemused were you to hear White Sox GM Chris Getz say on Tuesday before the game that interim manager Grady Sizemore will now be considered for the job on a permanent basis? Why do you believe there's been a reversal from comments made back in August? What about our guy Bruce Levine mentioning Dodgers first base coach Clayton McCullough? Which of the two do you prefer and why?
I got to tell you, I mean, this Sox season has been just the most horrible, brutal thing to watch and to witness. The idea that they even came into the year with Pedro Grifol, how that guy got hired to begin with, how he took a team that was like a 500 team and turned them into 100 losses, and then whatever the heck happened this year, and how he lasted as long as he did. You know, Grady Sizemore has been kind of fine. I don't have a real problem with him. When they promoted him, they made a point to say that this is an interim job only. He's not going to be up for the managerial job. I thought they were waiting on Skip Schumacher. What happened? Did he suddenly realize
he's going to take a better job?
Did he realize that there's only 8 first class seats on the plane? Did he not know that?
He's not sitting in coach.
Decide he's not going to Chicago. Yeah. That's fine. I mean, now you're talking about a guy, Clayton McCullough. I don't know enough about him. I like the fact that I don't know anything about him, believe it or not. Just as long as I don't know anything, I'm happy. I worry that this is a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience in the job, similar to Grady Sizemore. I mean, whatever they do, it's going to end up being the wrong move. I've got very little faith in Jerry Reinsdorf, Chris Getz, anybody connected to the Southside team right now.
At least they're open-minded.
I mean, I'm just being honest.
Well, I think the biggest issue with all of this is the reversal of comments made in August. If Chris Getz is going to be out in front and the guy in charge, he didn't need to say that Grady Sizemore wasn't a candidate when he went ahead and made those comments. He didn't need to do that. There was no reason. And we think we talked
about... Mike Tomlin wouldn't have done it.
Right, Mike Tomlin wouldn't have done it. Right. Exactly right. Mike Tomlin wouldn't have done it. Grady Sizemore... But I would love to know more. Who are the pool of candidates? You know, since it's anybody in the major leagues that's in a uniform is a candidate. Okay, great. I mean, that's... This many people, right? Mully just made the Manziel money, money, money sign, right?
Whoever comes cheap.
But Clayton McCullough, okay, could we try to make a comparison? So the Cubs had Brandon Hyde. He was the first base coach when they were doing well. Then he takes the Orioles job. But how long is it taking Brandon Hyde to get the Orioles to the postseason?
So you need a Cubs comp?
No, I'm just saying, I'm just using it as an example. Like a first, I mean, I don't, how many first base coaches end up being managers, I guess is my point.
You don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know.
And I honestly thought from a PR standpoint, like mm-hmm. Willie Harris, a former Sox, mm-hmm. third base coach in Chicago, would that make any kind of sense? I just don't understand why
I think they should hire somebody who's done the job before. Clayton McCullough is not a terrible choice. Comes from a winning organization. He does have minor league managing experience, so that would be a positive. I don't know that you're going to get anybody that is going to relish the job necessarily, because you're looking at a 100-loss season next year. Who knows what you're looking at the year after that? So if you sign a 3 or 4 year contract, you have some maybe security, but who's going to give a new manager who's unproven a 4 or 5 year contract? Probably not Jerry Reinsdorf. Probably not him. So good name, Clayton McCullough. Bruce mentioned it. John Greenberg had mentioned it back when they fired Pedro Grifol. I really don't care what Grady Sizemore was told then and what he's being told now. I don't think he wants – I don't think he's a serious candidate for the role. If he comes back, you know what's going on here. They want to pay him – he doesn't need the money. Heck, he was working for $15 an hour. He may be working for $25 now. Who knows? He may get a raise up to $30 an hour.
If he offers to pay them, he definitely get the job.
I think that what you want is somebody who has done it before, ideally. I would bring in an executive who has done something before, even to be Chris Getz's boss. That's not a slight to Chris Getz, but he is doing this for the first time. What the White Sox lack as much as anything is executive infrastructure. They need to build up their baseball front office and get some credibility back. You do that by hiring somebody like Kim Ng, like somebody who's won at another organization, to bring those ideas, to bring that structure to Chicago. Then you hire a manager with experience, somebody like Schumacher if he wants the job. David Bell is on the street after being mm-hmm. the manager of the Reds, who did a pretty good job there. David Ross is still without a job. I would call all three of those guys, gauge their interest, be willing to pay them what they're worth, and move on.
No, I'm going to finish the question. The question is this.
That is Casey Johnson. He will be here in studio with Mully and Haw and you at 7:40. What is Zach LaVine's role on the Bulls this season? LaVine told The Athletic he would not stand in the way of development of a young player. So how differently will Billy Donovan handle LaVine this year? Is he still the first option on offense?
Well, I think he's got to be the first because that's the way that he plays naturally. Zach LaVine is a guy that if he is here, I know that people will cringe at his presence, but this is like his 10th year, isn't it? He's been in the NBA for a decade. Yep. He started when he was 19 years old. He may be the most overlooked, underappreciated, disrespected, really good player that we have seen come through Chicago. Name another guy that has done as well as Zach LaVine has done, not only on the court, but with his – he's had some pretty good contracts. He's making some pretty good money.
Yeah.
And he's constantly questioned, constantly doubted. And I get it, but he was branded not a winning player. I get it. Now he's healthy. Now he's back. Do you think he's going to give up shots because so Kobe White can develop? Maybe, but if you're down one – you got one possession with 5.4 seconds left and an out-of-bounds play. Who do you want taking this shot if you're Billy Donovan? Probably Zach LaVine. Probably Zach, right? So I think, yeah, good gesture. He's going to say the right things. He's been a guy who typically does say the right things. I know we got a little bit of a snafu with the agent forcing trade and wanting the deal. We get that. But he's a pro, and I think he's going to represent himself like a professional.
With all due respect, though, when you say branded, he earned that. He is a loser based on his record. The teams he has played on are losing teams, not branded.
You just called Zach LaVine a loser.
No.
I mean, what you're saying is that at one point in his career, he was the losingest player in the league.
That's a fact.
Yes, because he had been with Minnesota and then came to Chicago before there were any
victims. That doesn't sound as bad as calling him a loser.
But he wasn't branded that. But yeah, I mean, he was not branded that.
All-star, Olympian, pretty good player. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and he's made a ton of money, so he gets criticized because his teams aren't winning. That's the problem. But he should be the number one option. The Bulls should want him to be the number one option because you want to trade this guy and you want to be able to get as much as you can for him. So he needs to be scoring 25-plus points a game, hitting big shots when that moment is there for him to make the shot. He's the guy you want to have the ball in his hand in all big moments so that you can trade and get the most back for him.
You know, I understand DeMar DeRozan was considered a guy that was more of a one-dimensional player, that he didn't play great defense, and that he spent too much time on the floor, whatever it might be. But the fact of the matter is, he was always in the top five, if not higher, as clutch player in the NBA. That was the guy that made shots to win games at the end. I'll be very curious to see if that role now is Zach's. And I've said this before. They've talked about trading him. They've talked about having a rough relationship with him. He opted for surgery last year. He didn't have to have it. He opted out, and we thought he was going to be traded in the offseason. I don't know what his trade value is. I don't know if he needs to rehab his reputation. I'm with you, David. I think he's a really good player, and I think he's been a good player. But I'm going to be very curious to see how they use him. And I think they're going to have to start him in order to build up and rehab him in order to then trade him, because he does make a lot of money and because they are in a rebuild. But I also think that if you brought him off the bench, you might be able to do that. I just don't know that he'd go with it.
I don't know if he'd go with that.
I just don't think he
would. I don't think he would go with that.
If he and Vooch were team two coming into the
game. Yeah, I don't know if you increase his trade value by making him a sub.
Yeah, I don't think
you do
either.
It's an interesting idea.
It would be curious to see how they choose to use him and what they have to say
about that. Would you bristle? I'd bristle.
I bristle about everything. I know. So why would that be different?